Speaking of transportation and boat rides, there's a story of an old sailor who got lost at sea and got marooned on an island alone. And he was there for several years before a ship passing by saw his fire. And so they changed course, turned around, and came back to the island to do the rescue. So the captain and the crew came on board, and they saw that he had three huts. And they asked him, "Why do you have three huts? What are those?" And the old man, the old sailor, said, "Well, that first one, that's where I live. And that second one, that's where I go to church." And then they said, "Well, what about the third one?" And he said, "Oh, well, that's where I used to go to church." Now, it's a funny story, but it might hit home just a little bit. Not too long ago, there was a Twitter survey where the question, it was just meant for fun, but actually it really blew up. There was a Twitter survey that was asking people, what is something that caused arguments or division in your church? And some of the answers were ones what we probably have heard before. The temperature in the sanctuary, the color of the walls, whatever, the color of the carpets. But there were some more kind of off-the-wall ones that I caught my attention. So I want to share a few of those with you today. These are things that cause division or arguments, or in a couple cases, even church splits. There was an argument over the appropriate length of the worship pastor's beard. So, Logan. A dispute. This one I really cannot even actually understand why, but there was a dispute over whether or not to install restroom stall dividers. Another church reported that an actual whole church vote was required on whether or not to remove a clock from the sanctuary. Another church said that there were business meeting arguments that broke out over whether or not the church should purchase a weed whacker. And in fact, it took two business meetings to resolve that conflict. Two different churches reported fights over the type of coffee in the church cafe. I could almost understand that one. Now this one's pretty severe. Someone reported that some church members left the church and resulted in a church split when another church member hid the vacuum cleaner from them. I don't know. You are welcome to hide the vacuum cleaner from me. I do not care where it is. And finally, an argument broke out over whether the church should allow deviled eggs at the church picnic. And they report, now remember, this is Twitter, so is everything you read on Twitter accurate? I do not know. But they reported to resolve this by someone else bringing angel food cake to counteract the deviled eggs. So unity in an individual church is incredibly essential for a church to maintain and to grow, but it's also one of the hardest things to come by, because when you bring people together, whether that's an individual church or the church as a whole, when you bring people together from different backgrounds, different experiences, different opinions, you're bound to have arguments. You're bound to have disagreements. It's human nature. It's what we do. But Jesus calls us to be unified. And today we're starting a two-part series called A Vision Worth Praying For. And in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be looking at Jesus's vision for us, for the church, that he prayed about right before he went to the cross. And that vision was for the church to be unified. So in this sermon series this week, we're going to look at Jesus' vision and why he had that vision of unity. And next week, Pastor Chip will be talking about kind of the practical side of that. How do we do that? What do we do? What's our role in being unified? Did you know that right before Jesus died and went to the cross, he thought about you? Did you know that right before Jesus died and went to the cross, he prayed for you? Every single person in this room. Try to picture this scene. The night before Jesus died, he has the 12 disciples with him. These are his best friends. They've been together 3.5 years. He's trained them, taught them everything they need to know to carry on the church. He's showed them the love of the Father, his best friends. He takes his 12 disciples to a place called the Upper Room, and it was called that because it was on the second floor of a building, and he took them to celebrate the Passover, which would soon become known as the Last Supper. Let's try to put yourself in this scene. He's washed the disciples' feet. The last meal has been shared. He knows that his friends will abandon him soon. Peter will deny him 3 times. He knows that within 24 hours, he will die on the cross. And he feels the world's hate. And in that time of the Last Supper, the Passover with the disciples, he prays a prayer, which is to become his final prayer. And in that prayer, he shares his vision for the church from that moment and for the rest of time. Now, I think, as with anyone's last words, they carry a certain weight that we might not otherwise pick up on in a different time, right? We don't pay quite as much attention, but with somebody's last words, we tend to pay a little more attention. And I believe that Jesus sincerely meant this prayer, and I believe he also sincerely wanted the disciples to hear it, because what he had to say was that important. And we're going to look at that today. Now, the actual prayer that Jesus prayed at the Last Supper is a pretty long prayer, so we're going to look at just a small piece of it today. I would encourage you to read all of it, though, sometime, because it's really beautiful. What was nearly the last words of Jesus, it's just a really beautiful prayer. And the first half, he talks about completing the ministry that God gave him to do, and it's kind of a send-off for the disciples. He prays a blessing over them, prays for protection over them. The second half of the prayer is where Jesus shares his vision for the church to be unified. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to read from John 17, verses 20 through 23, if you want to look at it with me. John 17, 20 through 23. It's on the screen. And it says this: I am praying not only for these disciples, but also for all who will ever believe in me through their message. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you. And may they be one in us, so that the world will believe you sent me. I have given them the glory you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one. I am in them, and you are in me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. There is a major theme of unity just in these few verses. Jesus praying for us to be unified just as he is with the Father. One of the most important things, think about that, one of the most important things to Jesus as he's preparing to go to the cross to die for us, one of the most important things on his mind was that we be unified. That's how important it was to him. Look at 20 and 21 again. Jesus says, I'm praying not only for these disciples, but also for all who will ever believe in me through their message. That is you, that is me. And my prayers for all of them, that they too will be one and unified with each other. That is us. He was praying for us before he went to the cross. And that prayer was that we would be unified. So why was this Jesus' vision for us? Why was this so important to him? First of all, I want to take a look at what exactly does unity mean? What's a good definition of unity? And this is kind of a compilation of a few dictionaries. And it says that unity is oneness of mind, in harmony, in agreement, the quality of being one in spirit, sentiment, or purpose. The quality of being one in spirit, sentiment, or purpose. The opposite of unity is division. And division destroys unity. Say that again. The opposite of unity is division. Division destroys vision. Division destroys vision. Now, since the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he knew that there were people trying to find fault with him, that people were watching, always looking for some reason to find fault. The religious leaders, the Pharisees, a lot of people were trying to find fault. And he knew that one of the best ways to combat that would be for us, for Christians, to stay unified. He knew that. And he knew that the same would happen throughout time, even today. So why was unity so important to Jesus? We're going to look at three reasons today. And actually, there's so many more than that. The Bible is full of verses. I came across over a dozen reasons why unity was so important to Jesus, but we're just going to look at three today. And the first one is that it shows the world who we belong to, and it leads other people to Jesus. There is nothing more important than that. Shows the world who we belong to, and it leads people to Jesus. It shows people the faith that we have, and it's a testimony of who we belong to. Earlier in John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, Jesus said this, "So now I'm giving you a new commandment, love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." Our love for each other shows the world that we follow Jesus. And that kind of love puts each other first. It meets each other's needs. It puts our own opinions, agendas aside. That's the kind of love that Jesus had. And notice, it wasn't a question. He didn't say, hey, could you guys try to love each other? Just do your best. It's a commandment. He said it's a new commandment. Love each other in the same way that he loves us. And when we do that selflessly, unconditionally, it gives him glory. It gives him honor. The most significant offshoot of that is that Jesus connects our love for each other with other people coming to believe in him. Back to those two verses again, 20 and 21 in chapter 17. I'm going to read that one more time because it's so important. "I am praying not only for these disciples, but also for all who will ever believe in me through their message." Remember, that's us. "I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in me, Father, and I am in you. And may they be in us," it's right here, "so that the world will believe you sent me." So that the world will believe you sent me. So our unity, working together, loving each other, is an evangelism tool, and it's the best one that we have, because the world is full of mess, especially right now, isn't it? There's division, there's arguments. People don't need to come to church to find that. They need to come to church to find something better than that. And Jesus knew how important that was. Something that always kind of baffles me and concerns me, and it should baffle and concern us, is when there's somebody that calls themselves a Christian, a follower of Jesus, but they can't get along with anyone. They argue, they pick at people, they criticize, they talk behind each other's backs. When you have an encounter with the love of Jesus, it changes you. It makes you want to love better and live better and treat each other better. I don't know how you can have that encounter and not want to turn around and share the same love. You know, imagine if we wore our Serve God, Serve People shirts out in the community, but we're mean to everybody, or critical, or just not getting along, or other people see us fighting. What kind of a testimony is that? People can find that out in the world, but they shouldn't and don't need to come to church to find that. And the reality is people are watching. Some people are watching because they're looking for something more than what the world has to offer. They're looking for love. They're looking for peace. They're looking for hope. They're looking for community. Community. And do you notice that the word unity is inside the word community? Some people are looking for that. Hopefully, they'll see it in us. They'll be attracted to that, because who doesn't want to be part of a community and to feel loved? The other reality is some people are watching because they're trying to find fault, right? Just like they did with Jesus, just like the Pharisees did. Some people are trying to find something that the church does wrong so they can say, see, I told you so. But let's not give them that reason to say that. Let's give them the reason to say, you know what, maybe I was wrong. Those people are okay. Unity shows the world that we belong to Jesus, and it draws other people to him. The second reason is that unity removes fear and creates boldness. Unity was important to Jesus because it removes fear and creates boldness. A unified church gives everyone more power, more courage than a divided church. Think about it. Think about it, a church where there's division, where there's arguments about deviled eggs and bathroom stalls. That just breeds chaos, right? There's confusion. People don't know who to follow. It takes our eyes off of what's important. But a unified church creates courage and boldness. I do not watch TV. Actually, I don't like TV at all. But the one thing that I do watch are animal documentaries. I love to watch animal documentaries. I've seen many. And the animal kingdom understands this incredibly well. It's like this innate thing that God's put inside of animals. And you could probably watch any animal documentary and you're going to see something like this. But one of my favorites are the elephants. Elephants truly understand that unity removes fear and creates boldness. When a mother elephant is getting ready to deliver her baby elephant, all the other female elephants in the herd, which are many, they surround the mother. They back in so that they're facing out, and they surround her in a formation. They close ranks. They stomp their feet, and they kick up all kinds of dust and dirt and make all kinds of ruckus. So much, and dust flying around, and so much so that any potential predators or attackers can't even see the mom and the baby in the middle. And they're sending a message to the attackers. If you want to get to this mom in her vulnerable moment, you're going to have to get through 40 tons of aggressive elephant first. They've got it figured out. And when the baby elephant is delivered, all those moms surrounding in the circle kick dust on the baby to protect its fragile skin from the sun and the heat. And then they trumpet, beautiful trumpet call that elephants make, to announce a miracle birth in a place that's full of attackers and predators and a baby born against the odds. You see any parallels there? The elephants understand that there's safety in numbers. They understand how to surround the vulnerable. When our church members or our church family, when someone's in a time of crisis, what do? We surround them, right? We pray for them. We come together around the people that need it, and we lift each other up. We hold each other up. It takes out the fear, doesn't it? It creates boldness. It creates courage, not just for the person in crisis, for all of us because that's when we start to see the power of God working, when we come together in a unified group. And you know, I see that happen all the time. I have a list of people in my cell phone that I know I could call in a crisis at any time of day or night. That's what we do. When we feel alone, when we feel afraid, the first thing we want to do is reach out for that community, because unity removes fear and creates boldness. We gain courage, we gain confidence, we gain hope. We do that by praying for each other and meeting each other's needs. I want to look at Philippians chapter 1, 27 and 28, which is kind of like the perfect summary of this. Above all, this is verse 27, above all, you must live as citizens of heaven, conducting yourselves in a manner worthy of the good news about Christ. Then whether I come and see you again or only hear about you, I will know that you are standing together with one spirit and one purpose, fighting together for the faith. I love that, fighting together for the faith, which is the good news. Right here, get this verse. Don't be intimidated in any way by your enemies. This will be a sign to them that they are going to be destroyed, but that you are going to be saved, even by God himself. Standing together in one spirit, in one purpose, not being intimidated by our enemies. Unity removes fear and creates boldness. There is safety in numbers. You want to know what unity does? Unity makes a group of people from a church in Reynoldsburg travel for 3 days to the remotest parts of the jungle to stand with a sister church in Portel, Brazil, to bring them hope and encouragement, to bring water filters to people who otherwise might have felt forgotten. That's what unity does. Unity does this. When we, a few years ago, we had a church member, a family, lose everything in a fire. And I saw this church come together with just bagfuls of clothes and utensils and furniture, carloads of stuff, to get them back on their feet. That's what unity does. This church is so good at this. We already have this one figured out. You know what else unity does? Unity is watching Anel Gibson come and stand next to my daughter in the front row during church last Sunday so she wouldn't have to be by herself because her dad was in Brazil and her mom was playing the keys. That's what unity does. Unity looks for people that are alone, and they stand alongside them, and they see them through. And if you guys don't know Anel Gibson, you need to meet her. She is fabulous. She is. You know, sometimes unity's big things like mission trips. Sometimes unity is little things by like standing by someone in church, but none of that is bigger or smaller than the other. It's so important. Unity removes fear and creates boldness. We're stronger together. The last reason is that Jesus died to unite us, not divide us. I'm going to say that one more time because it's very important. Jesus died to unite us, not divide us. Ephesians 2, 14 through 16 says this. For Christ himself has brought peace to us. He united Jews and Gentiles into one people when, in his own body on the cross, he broke down the wall of hostility that separated us. He did this by ending the system of law with its commandments and regulations. He made peace between Jews and Gentiles by creating in himself one new people from the two groups. Together as one body, Christ reconciled both groups to God by means of his death on the cross, and our hostility toward each other was put to death. I like how the Living Bible says it. The feud ended at the cross. He died to unite us, not divide us. Right now, more than ever, there's hostility, there's feuding, there's disagreements, angst out in the world. People are divided on so many things. But Jesus died to get rid of that. He died to unite us, not divide us. He died so that hostility would end, the feuding would end. How can we let it end if we're going to squabble over secondary, unimportant things? How do we do that if we're focused on our own agendas and what we think should be happening instead of the greater good, which is the vision that Jesus had for us? Matthew chapter 12, this is probably a familiar verse, says, "Any kingdom divided by civil war is doomed. A town or family splintered by feuding will fall apart." And this, you might have heard this version before. Some versions say, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." Jesus knew that when he prayed that prayer for us right before he went to the cross. Now, in the practical sense, sometimes that's hard, right? Like we said, we're all coming from different experiences, different opinions, different backgrounds. We, the church, need to be intentional about not getting focused on those secondary minor things that don't matter, being willing to put those aside and saying, you know what, I love you first, and that's what matters the most. We're going to start bringing this home with this thought. Jesus prayed that prayer right before his death with all of us in mind, every single one of us in this room, because he knew how important it was going to be from that moment until the rest of time for the church to stay unified. He knew that the church would have to be of one mind and one purpose to maintain and to grow, because it's a harsh world out there. He wanted us to defend each other, not criticize each other. He wanted us to love each other, not argue with each other. He wanted the church to model love to the rest of the world. But you know what? There's somebody out there that hates unity, Satan. The devil hates unity. He wants to keep us picking at each other and arguing at each other because he knows that a unified church is unstoppable. He knows that a unified church is a force to be reckoned with. When we're alone and we're vulnerable, when we're disagreeing, when we're not unified, the enemy has plenty of room to throw his darts, doesn't he? But when we stay locked in, close ranks, we're an unstoppable force. You might have heard this quote before. It says, "Snowflakes are fragile, but if enough of them stick together, they can stop traffic." Alone, we can't do so much, right? But when we stick together, we could stop traffic. We can be that force to be reckoned with for the kingdom. And then, and through the power of Jesus and the Holy Spirit, we can do that. Jesus loved us so much from the beginning that this was his vision for us from the moment that he was going to the cross for the rest of time. Vision for us to be unified. So let's fulfill that vision. Let's stick together. Put aside the secondary things. Focus on the vision that Jesus spoke over us over 2,000 years ago. Stick together and be that force to be reckoned with. We're going to close in prayer. Father, thank you so much for your word and what you promise us in that, what you teach us through it about being unified, sticking together, putting aside our differences, and just focusing on your vision for us, which is to stay unified and to love each other the way you love us. And we thank you that this was your vision for us, and we thank you that you are walking this out with us, God. Thank you, Jesus. In your name I pray. Amen.